In this episode, I interviewed actor Catherine Kendall about her experience acting in the film Swingers from 1996. This was written by Jon Favreau. It was directed by Doug Liman. Jon Favreau also starred in the film alongside Vince Vaughn, Heather Graham, Ron Livingston, and Patrick Van Horn. Here's what Catherine has to say about acting in this great film, Swingers. Welcome to Robert Bellissimo at the Movies. This is a YouTube video podcast exploring storytelling on film, as well as interviews with industry professionals who work in film, television, and theater, among other areas of the arts. I want to welcome to the show Catherine Kendall, who has appeared in numerous plays, television shows, and feature films, which include The Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, Beverly Hills 90210, The Farmhouse, where she played Blythe Danner's daughter, Flatland with Dennis Hopper, and of course, Swingers, which we're discussing today. She is also the host of the podcast Roar. Catherine, welcome. Thanks again for joining me.
You're welcome. I'm happy to be here.
I've been really looking forward to talking to you about this because this, you know, Swingers has always been a personal favorite of mine. So I'm really looking forward to hearing about your experience acting in this classic film. But before we jump into that, I just wanted to ask, because I know you were born in Memphis, Tennessee, and then you grew up in Washington. So when did your interest in acting start?
Oh, I think my interest in acting started when I was a kid and I saw someone dressed in a bunny rabbit costume, you know, in some play somewhere. And I thought, you know, it was all about the costumes for me when I was a child. And then later I was a ballet dancer for a long time. So that's how I got to, you know, discover the theater. And then later in high school, I took a drama class and got bit by the bug.
And when you went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, so you headed over to New York, how was that experience studying there?
Oh, it was magical. It was one of those times in my life where everything was aligned. You know, the people that I met in my class, Tony Napo is one of them. You know, we're still friends. The whole class, so many people from that graduating class are still close friends of mine.
Oh, wow. That's great. It's so rare, isn't it?
So rare. Yeah. New York at the time was also incredibly special. And it just seemed like a really golden time in life.
And so when you were, you know, because I know you were working there doing theater and various other acting jobs and such. Why did you decide to go to Los Angeles?
I think that at the time I would audition for a lot of things out of New York, but they all were filming in Los Angeles anyway. So most television shows, a lot of film, I remember coming out to Los Angeles to test for some television shows. And it seemed to be like a gravitational pull, like everything kept bringing me to Los Angeles at that time. And again, like a bunch of my friends moved out at the same time that I did. And it just seemed like a little bit more opportunities were happening in LA.
Right. And was that a challenging transition to go from New York to LA, or how was that generally?
I think generally it can be. I find I got lucky because, like, so many of my friends were doing the same thing at the same time, that there was a support system around it. I think coming to LA without that would be an incredibly brave thing to do and hard. But I had, you know, an agent and jobs sort of lined up to audition for, and I was babysitting for a family that actually was, as my side job, I was a sort of a nanny slash babysitter and for a family that were actors, and they were acting in LA and New York too.
Wow.
So I had a lot of reason to be coming out to LA.
Oh, very nice. And so now I know that, now did you audition for Swingers in the traditional route where your manager or agent got you the audition and you went in? Is that basically how the part came to you?
I did audition for it in the traditional way, but that's not how I heard about the project originally. I found out about the project originally because one of the producers, Eden Wormfeld, was staying at my next door neighbor's house. And we were talking about dancing. She knew I'd been a dancer. And she's like, can you swing dance? And I was like, yeah. And so she's like, I'm going to be working on this movie. You know, maybe you can come and audition. So then I told my manager about it. And then she already knew about it because Patrick Van Horn was one of her clients and he was already part of it. So I ended up getting, a traditional audition for one of the parts. But I sort of heard about it to begin with from my next door neighbor. I don't know if I would have heard about it otherwise, because it was one of those small movies that honestly wasn't, when it was being made, when small independent movies are being made, sometimes they're just not on people's radar to even get you in for the auditions.
Right, right. And now when you went into the room, I know that you were there with Jon Favreau, of course, for those of you who don't know, wrote and starred in the film as well. Now, did they lift the scene, one of the scenes that you were in from Swingers in the audition room, or what exactly did you read for?
I auditioned for it for the role that I got, for the role of Lisa.
Oh, okay. Right. Mm-hmm. And did the scene change at all from the audition to the shooting, or was it the script pretty much stayed the same?
You know, the script pretty much stayed exactly the same. It felt very improvisational, and even in the audition, it felt improvisational for some reason, but I think that was the energy and the style of John and Vince.
Yeah.
The script was actually written and already done. And I think it was pretty close to how they had written it, or he had written it. And when I say they, I meant how they had rehearsed it, because I know that that John and Vince and some of the other guys that were in the cast had been reading the script and doing a lot of readings for, I think, about a year, just trying to perform it to get financing.
Okay.
So I think that the script was done.
Oh, okay. Great. And what do you remember about the audition? What was it? Was it, you know, just kind of go in, do it, get a redirect and leave? Or did something pop out to you that you remember about it that was memorable?
Well, I do remember that the feeling in the room was, like I said, fun and improvisational, and they might have had an idea that I was right for the part pretty quickly walking in. John told me years later, I think, that when I came into the room, that I almost knocked over something, like a statue or something.
Oh God.
And then I picked it up really quickly. And that maybe there was something about the way that I did that, which I have no recollection of any of this, by the way.
this was in a house, right?
It was in a house.
Okay, right.
Teacher's house. And that sort of might have tipped him off, and I, for some reason, that there was something about me that was right for the part. So maybe it was my accident that got me the part, not my reading. I don't know. But I do know that they were, I mean, look, John and Vince were some of the best actors I've ever worked with because of their rhythm and their energy. And I don't think you have to do very much when you're with someone like that. You just have to listen and you're in it with them.
Yeah, they're Yeah, they certainly, you know, when you see them on screen, they just it feels like they've known each other their whole lives. They just have this sense of connection that that you could tell that they just can play off each other so beautifully. Yeah. I mean, the whole cast, that's what's so great about this film. Everybody just feels that they are that person. I mean, it's so well done. Was there a callback or was it just one audition and you got it?
That's a great question. I can't remember.
I want to know all the nitty gritty details.
I know. I feel like it was kind of one of those readings where the producers and Doug Liman were in the room. I mean, that's what I remember. I remember going to the producer's house and I remember everybody was in the room when I walked in and they were all nice people. You know, it was a friendly environment to walk into. Sometimes auditions can be intimidating and
of course, yeah,
you know, sort of sterile and all those things. But this one felt very relaxed. And I just remember that feeling. We might have done it a couple of times. And I think there might have been I walked out of that audition feeling like maybe that was a good one. You know, like I might have even known I was going to get a call, another call, by the way it had gone. They might have even said that. I just don't remember that exactly. But yeah, it did feel that way, you know.
Fantastic. Like,
yes, that was great, you know.
Yeah. Fantastic. And do you remember if you went with did you have some kind of Dorothy costume in the audition did you not worry about that?
No, I didn't. I don't even know if I auditioned with the Dorothy sides as much as I did with the Lisa part of the sides, the trailer scene.
In the trailer. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Great. And what was, the other cast, like Dina Martin, who was in that scene, she seems to have disappeared. I know that you were saying in another interview, you haven't seen her in a number of years, but no one really knows if she left the business or.
She might have left the business, but you know, I never saw her. I don't remember being in touch with her that many years after, but I liked her so much. I mean, she was a really cool woman and she still is. So all of that energy, it was just so relaxed and easy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she was so great in it. And I know that you knew Dina Martin, right? Who played Nikki?
Oh, you mean Brooke Langton?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Dina Martin.
Oh, I'm saying the same person. Yeah. What am I saying?
That's okay. That's okay.
Luckily, Dina Martin, I can edit this.
I'll tell you what's funny. I don't know if you've heard this or not, but this is true. The guys really thought that Dina Martin was Dean Martin's
daughter
or granddaughter.
And that's
they
hilarious.
Were so excited about it. But she wasn't, which is funny. yes, a separate from that,
Brooke Langton. That's the name. Yeah. I looked my notes here. Sorry, but you knew her, I believe.
Well, I didn't know Brooke until we had done the movie.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't even know her filming the movie. I met her separately afterwards, and then on something else. And then the movie came out, and we're like, oh, we were both in Swingers. Wow, I didn't know. And we're still friends to this day.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Yeah. That's the thing about this business. You can have scenes with people. I mean, you could be in movies with them and then not have ever met them years later.
It's true. It's very, it's true. It's never quite how it ends up looking on in the movies when you see the movie.
Exactly. What was Doug Liman like as a director? How did he direct actors?
I think Doug was really decisive, you know, kind of clear. He didn't talk a lot, but he knew what he wanted. And I think, again, I feel like they had cast the parts already knowing that they liked what we were doing. So there wasn't a lot of direction and rehearsal on the day. But, you know, if I think back, I think we might have rehearsed before we shot. And that also helped. Do you know what I mean? Like a whole other day.
Yeah. Before a whole other day. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I great. Think. And that's a rare thing.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly, but I feel like when I got onto the set, I really had this sense that we knew what we were doing and we were already there. And I don't always have that feeling, in movie and TV. Sometimes you have to change it quite a bit once you get on set. And according to the atmosphere or what your action might be physically, this was one of those seamless processes where we had already, we somehow were living those parts, and getting on the set was sort of just the next fun part to do. And Doug was, everybody, it worked so well. It was a magic chemistry at the time. It really was.
Yeah. You can really feel it. I'm not surprised. Cause like I said, everybody seems like they are so perfect for the part. I mean, there's nothing that feels off. It just feels like everyone was just living it and working off one another. And it's so alive. I mean, that the scene you had is so great, because it feel you are rooting for Favreau because of this breakup he's had, and you're kind of like, hope he's gonna get with you, and then when
you're also rooting for him with his ex-girlfriend, and you feel for him. There's something about him that there's something that read that way and felt that way, and there was something that made me feel sympathetic always in the read. And I know one thing I will say also is that, they were both sympathetic guys. I remember Vince, I didn't really know how funny his character was going to be until we were shooting. And that was something else,
Oh God,
that was really interesting, the way he brought his character to life. Because before, if you're just looking at the words baby, money, all those words, you've never heard them before. Never heard them before. I couldn't imagine how this guy was going to bring that to life and make it funny. And once he did, I was captivated.
Oh God. Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard not to crack up during the scene.
Yeah, no, I bet. I mean, that whole monologue he gives about going to an audition, that was where he started to cry, and then they tell him later it was for an 8-year-old boy.
It was painfully funny. It was one of those painfully funny things where you're really trying to keep a straight face.
oh god But you know what I like so much about the film is that Favreau, there's a certain humor that I'm really attracted to, where it's so funny but at the same time it's so embarrassing to watch. Mm-hmm. One of the well-known scenes of the film is calling Nikki when he gets home again and again and again, and you're laughing but you're like, put the phone down. It's so embarrassing. And the scene with you where you think, he's gonna get something going here, and then all of a sudden they cut from Vince Vaughn with Dina Martin back to you, and then he's talking to you about his ex-girlfriend. I mean, it's just, again, it's so funny. If you're just like, what are you doing? This is embarrassing. How can you do that right before kissing someone?
I know. Jon Favreau is an absolute genius. All know it. We can all see it. But one of the things that I like the most is his cleverness and his ability to write about these human awkward, but very real way we are.
it's so real, and it has such a simplicity to it. I also felt that way about his later film Chef, which is 8 years ago, 2014. He just has this simplicity, but yet at the same time is just speaking about something that's always so, it's just so universal. It's so relatable. I know you had said that you felt, the it's universal because it deals with heartbreak. Is that why you feel this film still really holds up well?
Yeah, I think so. Heartbreak, friendship, universal truths. Like, you know, he's so smart to sort of put in there that you can't fake getting over something. You have to really, get over it before then the person calls. You can't just fake that you're not interested in them anymore to get them to call. You have to really be. And he always seems to know the deeper truths of humanity somehow. But with this light banter and very clever banter, but very accurate to the LA scene. And to be able to write about that without it being super dark, because auditioning and living in Los Angeles and all the absurd things you have to go through as an actor,
right?
That can be just awful to watch. So that he could make it funny was really the key ingredient too, I think.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, because they also, you know, touch on a lot of the auditions that they're going for and, oh, I didn't tell my parents yet that I didn't get this part, or I'm thinking about taking this Disney, but you can't help but laugh at the same time. I mean,
right. And you didn't know, is interesting to me still is that it seemed like an industry movie, like you had to be in the business to get it. But what I found out later was that it all kinds of people, especially guys, really relate. A lot of guys who were in college would say, oh, that was the movie that was my theme movie. You know, that was the thing that got me through college. but it had nothing to do with the industry. You know, it wasn't acting at all or even LA.
Yeah. They could have been guys working in an office. It wouldn't have really,
right.
I mean, it would have been different based on some of the conversations they have, but the heart of it would have been the same, I feel, anyways.
It really would have. And that I didn't know until I saw the movie, you know, I was like,
yeah, wow, I can see that.
And even not just seeing the movie, but hearing about it years later from fans, it was a revelation to me, actually, that so many people, that it reached so many people.
So I take it that, so is this something you're approached about on the street often? People spot you and recognize you from Swingers?
If they do recognize me, I'm always surprised by that because it was this independent movie. And also, I think it hit later. You know, you're an actor, so you know, but you film something, you do it, it comes out a year later. And then in those days, then it didn't just get a release in the theater. So let's say it gets a release in the theater or maybe the coasts of the country or something. But what really did it for Swingers was, I think, the video stores.
Yeah. And yeah. So common in the 90s for these indie films to do well once they came out on video often.
Exactly. And so it was sort of years after, or a year or two after I had even made the movie. So then I was really surprised. You know, if you're on a television show like 90210 and you go outside the next day, people are, even if you're a guest star, this is my experience anyway, people would say, were you on 90210 last night? And you think, oh my God, how did you? Yeah, but that's crazy that you even know that. But because it's so immediate with movies, sometimes that it comes out afterwards, so it surprises you. You weren't there for the audience reaction.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. Something you had just said a little while ago is that you had thought it was such an insider movie, and I could see why you would feel that way, because there are so many movie references. They do the Goodfellas shot towards the end through the kitchen. They do the Reservoir Dogs shot of the guys Walking, the opening of Reservoir Dogs, they do that, and they talk about movies endlessly. Like, was that not endlessly, but often in the script? Was that why you thought, oh, this is about really about Hollywood, perhaps?
That was one of the reasons, for sure.
Right.
And also because they talk about acting as a profession in the movie. Yeah, also because it was sort of an LA movie. It had to do with going to a bar that didn't have a sign on the outside and following people in cars to go to a party because everyone has to drive in LA. And I didn't know how much that would resonate with people. And of course the nods to Goodfellas and all those things. I think that it's a lesson that audiences are smarter than you think. And if, you know, you don't have to be so on the nose and to, you know, you don't have to write to the masses. You just have to write the truth, and the truth resonates somehow. So that's kind of
absolutely
cool.
Absolutely. What was it like to see it on the screen? Did you immediately feel like, wow, this is a special film I'm in? Like, what was it like to see it?
It was definitely electric. It was an electric screening the first time I saw it. And I saw it in a theater with other people, and it was pretty wild. I think there was, you know, a bidding war started immediately after the movie. After everyone clapped and the movie was over, outside on his cell phone. I mean, it was like that. It was really
for distribution is what you mean, right? Okay, right.
Yeah, I mean, it was like boom, and everybody. While I knew that everything was fun making it, I was really taken with how fun it was to watch it with the music and the humor and the energy, like you said, the connection between all the characters.
Yeah. No, it's so good. I mean, I probably saw this when I was too young, because my older cousins and my older brother loved it. And you know, you wanna fit in with your older siblings and family. And so I always just took to it. Even, I mean, this came out 96, so I was 9, and I was way too young to see it, but I always loved it. I'm sorry, what was that?
You understood it. You understood enough about it to know. Yeah. It was really good.
There was something about it. And we would for years say, you know, your money to each other, you know, my cousin, me and my family members. But I watched it again before today, and I haven't seen it in quite a while. And one thing that really struck me about it was this element of how Jon Favreau's character is going through heartbreak, and all of his friends, especially Vince Vaughn's character, is coaching him how to talk to women. And it's this, it's making him feel as if he can't be himself, that he has to, you know, pull all these tactics, which, as we see, he's terrible at, and he falls, and it's just making things worse and worse for him. And it really isn't until the scene with Heather Graham at the end, the growth of his character, where he really is totally being himself. When his car comes up, he even says, "Oh, it's that piece of shit over there." Meanwhile, early in the film, at the one woman at the party, he's trying to impress her with her car and with his car, and she's not impressed. Or when he's talking to Nikki, you know, he doesn't want to admit that he's not working right now as a comedian, so as an actor he's making things up. But then Heather Graham, he tells her the truth. I mean, he let that mask drop, and I think the film really was saying, you know, you gotta love yourself first if you're gonna be able to love someone else, and if they're going to be able to love you. I just thought that was such a moving, great lesson.
I thought so too. Yeah. I think that's sort of what I mean by his ability to grab those universal truths or big lessons. And, and also to be such a young writer and to do that.
Mm. Yeah.
you know.
Yeah, he was like not even 30. Like he was 30 when it came out. So he was not even 30 when he wrote it. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. He must have been in his 20s and it was from his own, you know, he had enough life perception to be able to write that about, I mean, you think that would be somebody more in their late 30s that would.
Yeah, exactly. Looking back. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
It's quite something. And one thing I also liked about it so much was that these guys, they all really love each other, you know, like they all really love Favreau, Mikey, and they really believe in him. They really want the best for him. And I know the scene where one of the guys is about to get into a fight in the parking lot and he pulls a gun out and then he starts to, in the argument, make fun of Mikey for not having been with anyone in the last 6 months. And you see Vince Vaughn really stands up for him. And I know that was something he insisted on to show that he really cared for him. He wasn't like he was always just looking for a wingman, you know? I mean, do you remember if that was initially in the script, or I don't know if you remember anything about that by any chance?
I don't remember if that was initially in the script or anything about that, but I will say that that kind of friendship, that male friendship, I don't think we're always privy to that. I think we think of women maybe being more emotional and supportive, and sometimes we think guy friendships in college or after college are a little bit more, for lack of a better word, like bro talk or
exactly.
And I loved that these guys loved each other, because then it had a sort of, you know, like Stand By Me kind of energy, like guys that are friends that really have a vulnerability and care. And I don't think Vince, we wouldn't have liked Vince if he didn't really love John.
Exactly. Yeah. No, for sure. I mean, just thinking about it, I laugh, particularly at the end during the swing dance with Heather Graham, and they cut to Vince Vaughn and he's like, just God bless that kid. He says something like that. And just like, they just really wanted the best for him. I mean, it's a beautiful thing to see. I know you'd mentioned that you haven't seen this in a long time. Is it, and that it's hard for you to watch yourself in films. Is it still hard in general to see yourself?
It's getting better. I mean, now that it's been so long, I'm so much more removed than to have that kind of criticism of myself. I think initially any actor, like anytime I saw myself when I was younger, I would just be like, oh no. It's like hearing yourself speak or something. You have to get over that. And so there's been enough space that I can watch it now and relax a little bit more, I think. And you're making me want to rewatch the movie again, actually. This conversation is making me want to watch it tonight, you know.
Good. No, it's such a treat. When was the last time you saw anyone from the cast, Favreau or Vaughn? I know you were in touch with Favreau, I believe, for a while. Is that right?
Yeah, I saw the last time I remember seeing Jon Favreau was at the Iron Man premiere, the first Iron Man.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And I don't even know how and why I was there, but maybe through friends or different, but he was, I remember seeing him there, and it was a great moment to see him really be celebrated for everything that he has always been. We may have been in touch a couple times since then. I can't remember, but time has really flown. I know that I've seen Doug Liman.
Oh.
And yeah, because we have mutual friends and so I've seen him several times, and he's also doing terrifically in his career. And it's always fun to hear. You know, it's funny to me that Doug is such a big action director, and yet this funny sort of character driven piece, but he is also very funny. He's also a very funny guy. So
Yeah, it's interesting to see how they really both have gone into very, very different, much more commercial type of films. Yeah, which is so, so different than this, or after this, Favreau did Made, and Doug Liman did a film called Go. So they were still doing these small film, but I suppose Hollywood's changed so much. You sort of have to, they went with the biggest opportunities, I imagine.
they probably went with the biggest opportunities, but I remember asking Doug like years ago and finding out from him that he was always enthralled with the complicated camera and action sequences, you know.
Oh, is that
and
right?
I never knew that. He always thought that was a challenge and fun and gave him adrenaline. And so that's really, I would not have known that on the set of Swingers, but fun to know that now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I wouldn't have, I mean, just like I said, judging from his early work, you wouldn't have thought that. Was Favreau, did you ever get an impression that the superhero films are that was his, you know, his cup of tea over the years, or was that a surprise?
The thing about that makes sense to me is that even the superhero movies and Mandalorian, they still have such great characters in them. So they're not just, you know, what he can do with CGI or whatever it is, you know, or filmmaking. Yeah. It's also, he's still in the area of great characters and great story. But John's brilliant. You know, he's one of those people that's, and they both are. I mean, these are really smart guys that can put their brains around all of those things at once, which really hard for me. I feel like I would just be sort of someone who would just be more of a character person or just be more, you know, but to do all of it is it's like, it takes a lot of brains, a lot of brains.
Oh yeah. No, definitely. Yeah. No, it's interesting to see how they've evolved. Can you tell us a little bit about what your podcast Roar is about?
Oh yeah. So Roar actually is about, it's not so much about, you know, acting business or anything.
Right.
I don't know if you know, but so in 2017, I was one of the women that came forward about Harvey Weinstein and, the sort of abuses that were going on and something that happened to me. And after that, I met several women that were also Harvey Weinstein survivors. And one of those women runs a trauma center here in Los Angeles called Echo. And she hosts a yearly conference where she has people that deal with, you know, therapy and trauma and all this to come and speak. And she asked me if I would do a podcast for her conference, interviewing people about trauma, what it is, what it looks like, how we handle it in our bodies, all that kind of thing. And so I did that for her. And then the pandemic shutdown happened and I realized that I could still do these podcasts from home. And it was so interesting to talk to people. So I kept doing it. And I, as a way to educate myself and to keep communicating with people and help people get their stories out there. I didn't even really know that, like, what I had been through was considered a trauma. But now I do, you know, I've learned so much about what we do, what happens to the brain when we're threatened or, you know, violated. And so it's been an interesting educational journey and a spiritual journey for me in that way. So that's what my podcast is about, like the courage to speak out,
right,
you know, and the courage to learn about things that are incredibly painful, but that there can be an evolution there and something good can come of sometimes some of something that's very painful.
Yeah, definitely. No, I listened to some of the episodes, and yeah, it was pretty. It's pretty educational and intense. I mean, obviously the stories are going to be very emotional and hard to hear. But that's interesting that you learn so much about what you went through. Do some of those things make sense now when you look back? Like things that happened later where you didn't. Or they maybe do. Confusing that now makes they sense.
Do. Yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah.
To put the pieces of the puzzle together. I feel like it's an exciting time to, you know, with all the chaos that's going in the world, there it's also an exciting time to be in the world because we're knowing more and more about the brain and what it does, what it holds on to, how it affects us, and how we can rehabilitate from things. And I have found it to be really fascinating. Yeah, I feel like the last 5 years, I've learned so much about myself and my life, and I'm still continuing to learn about it. And not just like sexual violation and trauma, but trauma. Like everyone goes through it. Everyone's had something. Everyone, and right. We don't always know we've had it, and we don't always know how to get through it, or that we can even change that the certain things that we think are just part of our personality might actually be the result of a trauma.
Right.
I think that's really interesting.
And now because I noticed on your Instagram page, you posted a trailer. So there's a film coming out, which is about the investigation that you're now, do you play yourself in it or are you playing a fictional character?
No, I don't play myself actually.
Okay.
I'm not playing a fictional character either. I am playing someone else, a real person who was a part of helping the investigation happen. Yeah. And it's basically, it's the story of Jodi Kantor and Megan Toohey and how they brought that story to life. I mean, you know, discovered it all and how much they went through to get those stories and to bring it to light. It was years that they spent trying, knowing that they had information, but not knowing how to really break it in a way that would work.
Right.
I think it should be really interesting.
It looks really interesting. It reminded me of like all the President's Men, like these
completely,
two guys going up against, you know, a monster of a system that how can we break through and do something about this?
It's pretty monumental what they did. It truly is. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm looking. You wouldn't. Do you happen to know when that will be out?
I think it's going to be a nationwide release November 18th.
Oh, so soon. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. There's going to be, it's opening at the film festival in the New York Film Festival on October 13th. And that'll be at the New York Film Festival. Oh,
so soon. Yeah. Great.
And then it'll also be at the AFI Film Festival on November 4th in LA. And then the nationwide release will happen November 18th, I think.
Great. Fantastic. Yeah, I love Carey Mulligan as well. So I'm looking forward to
Carey Mulligan, Zoe Kazan,
and
also Patricia Clarkson, who I completely idolize.
Yeah,
is playing Rebecca Corbett, who's the editor of the New York Times. So it's a great cast. It's
fantastic.
Really, yeah,
fantastic. I'm looking forward to it. And what have you been working on recently? I saw you. Was it a television show or a film? I saw you were shooting something.
I just shot a film. With a director writer named Andrew Troy, and it's called Midnight in the Orange Grove. And it's a story, I think the best way to say it would be, it's a story about, let's see, I hope I say this right, adoption and sort of how, you know, bringing your love to a child and helping them grow in the world can make such a difference in their life. maybe that's a maybe not the best way to say it. I'm sure there's a more streamlined way of saying it, but I really fell in love with the character. I got to play a mother, and it's just something that I've always wanted to like play on screen and have that relationship with a daughter and or a child. And so it was really fun. It was cool.
Fantastic. So I'm looking forward to hearing more details about that. Is it too early to say when roughly that will be out?
I think it's too early. Yeah. He's already working on his next project.
Okay.
And called I Am a Man. And he's got some interesting things that he's doing, and I'm excited to watch his trajectory. Did I say that word? Trajectory.
You got it.
Yeah, I think it'll be exciting.
Great. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing both of those films. And where's the best place for people to follow you on social media, to follow your podcast, or generally what you're up to?
It's probably Instagram. KK Butter, which is a long story, but yeah. And then you can also follow Roar with Catherine Kendall. That's my podcast. And I think on Twitter, it's The Cat Kendall. And I go in and out with Twitter. Sometimes I think with all the politics, I'm like, okay, no, I just take a break. But sometimes, I think Twitter is a great place to find out information. And also, so I'm sort of hit or miss with Twitter, but you can follow me there for sure if you want to.
Great. Fantastic. Well, I'll leave all the links in the description box below where you can follow Catherine's career and also check out her podcast Roar. And I just wanted to thank you again for taking the time to talk about a film I've always loved that you're in. Thanks so much for coming on.
I'm so happy we got to do this, and it's always a reboot for me to hear how much Swingers affected people's lives. So that's really cool.
Oh, definitely. Well, thanks again, and hopefully I can have you back on some other time to talk about what you've got coming out.
All right, I love it. Sounds great.
Thank you so much, everyone, for watching and or listening. If you are currently listening to this on the audio version of my YouTube channel and you've run out of episodes to listen to, head over to the YouTube channel where every single episode that I have ever recorded can be found. Go to youtube.com/Robert Bellissimo at the movies. I also want to thank all of my members on Patreon. If you're interested in supporting me over on Patreon and getting bonus content at the same time, head over to patreon.com/Robert Bellissimo at the movies for full details. And lastly, if this is your first time here on my YouTube channel, please consider subscribing by pressing the Robert Bellissimo at the movies logo. It's absolutely free to do so. You will see the logo floating above my head in your top left corner in just a second. Just click on that and then click the bell in order to get a notification every time I release one of my new videos. Thank you so much, everyone. I will see you in the next episode.